Somewhere over the rainbow. Jenna frowned, told her mom she had to go, and ended the call. She detoured by City Hall on her way and forked out $50 for a business license. She hated to spend even $50 of her hard-saved funds, but this was seed money. She'd make it back with one massage. Heaven knew they needed to make money somewhere. "How's it going over there?" Tyrella asked her when she finally entered the hardware store. Today, Tyrella had her hair up in a colorful headscarf, and it accented her jeans and carpenter's apron with a chunky bead necklace and beachy charm bracelet dangling little seashells and coral-colored beads. "All the old carpet is gone. Painting is next. But first, I have to cover our leaky roof. Please tell me you've got enough tarp to do the job." "I do. I'll give you a 20% discount." Jenna smiled at her. "You're the best." "No, if I was the best, I'd be giving it to you for free. Come on, let's get you set up." Half an hour later, Jenna was ready to roll, her charge card maxed out and every corner of her car filled with tarp and 5-gallon buckets of paint. There went Aunt Edie's money and hers, and then some. She encouraged herself as she drove back to the motel by envisioning it all prettied up and decorated and filled with lodgers. She saw Seth's truck parked in the parking lot when she pulled in. Now was as good a time as any to see if he could make her some sort of sign. She knocked on his door. It opened to reveal a mussed sleeping bag on the floor, his cooler and a small pile of books. He had one in hand. "Were you busy?" she asked, feeling guilty for bothering him. Except, why was she feeling guilty? They had a deal. He worked in exchange for a bare floor.
"Just killing time till you came back. I went over to the house and met your aunt. She said you were out getting paint. Need some help unloading?"
"That would be great."
"So, what have you got for me today?" he asked as they walked to her car.
"Well, actually, I was hoping you could make me a sign. For my business." His brows dipped.
"I thought this place was your business."
"It is, but I'm also a licensed massage therapist. We need an income flow while I'm getting the inn renovated, and I've gotten set up in my aunt's spare room." He nodded thoughtfully.
"A massage therapist, huh? I'll have to keep that in mind for the future."
That comment produced an image of Seth Waters all oiled up, her running her hands over his back. "No, no, no, don't go there."
"What's the name of your business, and what do you want the sign to look like?"
"It's Healing Hands Massage. I just need a simple plaque with that on it. Can you help me out?"
"Sure. I'll have it for you tomorrow."
"Great. The sooner the better. Then tomorrow we should be ready to paint."
"You'd better let me pressure wash the outside and treat the mold before you paint the outside," he said.
"I thought I'd start with the inside and do the outside later when the weather's a little more dependable."
"Good idea. Let me know when you're ready."
"I will. And about the sign, I'll pay for the cost of your materials."
"It's not that much. Don't worry about it," he said.
With that, the topic of the to-do list was exhausted, but she was curious about the book he was holding. She pointed to it. "What are you reading?" He held it up for her inspection. "The Complete Works of William Shakespeare? I never figured you for a Shakespeare kind of guy." He shrugged.
"Just furthering my education. Never finished college."
"I never started," Jenna confessed. Did that make her sound stupid? "I like to read, though," she said. Not Shakespeare, but she decided not to share that. "Once I discovered massage, it was all I wanted to do, so I went to massage therapy school instead."
"At least you went to school for something."
He sounded wistful. She was about to ask why he didn't finish when he said,
"Well, see you tomorrow then."
"Yeah, tomorrow." And that signaled the end of the chit-chat for the day. Seth Waters sure wasn't much of a talker. Sometimes the way he looked at her with those dark pirate eyes, she could swear he was interested. But unlike Brody, he hadn't put the moves on her, so maybe she'd imagined that interest. Oh well, her first love was now the Driftwood Inn. It really was going to be cute once it was all done.
"Yes, it is,"
Aunt Edie agreed as they sat around the dinner table that evening, downing hot dogs and Aunt Edie's potato salad. She'd also made one of her standbys, a salad with strawberry gelatin, cream cheese, frozen strawberries, and a crust made with pretzel crumbs. If you asked Jenna, it was more dessert than salad. Not that she was complaining. Sabrina, who was on her second helping, sure wasn't. "The first thing we have to do tomorrow is get that roof covered," Jenna said.
"Don't look at me," Pete told her, dishing himself up more potato salad. "At my age, I could fall and break a hip."
"I can help," Sabrina offered, making her mother immensely proud of her. "That's sweet of you, but no, I don't want you up on the roof. I'll do it." She wouldn't cry buckets if Pete fell. Her daughter, however, was another matter. "But you're afraid of heights," Sabrina reminded her. "Even the little kid roller coaster at Enchanted Village used to scare you." On the other hand, Sabrina was afraid of nothing. All the more reason why Jenna wasn't letting her up on the roof. "The roof's not that high." She could do it. "Okay," Sabrina said doubtfully, giving Jenna doubts as well. "I hate to think of you up on that roof," Aunt Edie fretted. "Why don't you let that nice young man help you?" Jenna already had more than enough for Seth to do to earn his stay at the fabulous Driftwood Inn. She planned on getting Pete to help her. But really, it probably wasn't a good idea to send the old guy up on the roof with his brittle bones. So, this would be a job for Super Jenna. "I'll be fine," she assured both her aunt and herself. And she was. The next day, wearing the tool belt Tyrella had loaned her, which was stuffed with nails and Uncle Ralph's old hammer, she managed to get a roll of tarp up on the edge of the roof and herself as well, after several deep breaths. Oh, man. It was high up here, and in bad condition. Some of the shingles were missing, probably blown away by high winter winds. She could get blown away. "Don't be stupid," she scolded herself. The sun was out and there was no wind. Yet. She took another deep breath and inched farther up the roof. What if she dropped her tarp? Never mind the tarp. What if she dropped herself? More deep breaths. The roof wasn't steeply pitched, and she managed to make it to the peak where, gripping tightly with one hand, she squeezed her eyes shut and unfurled the tarp with the other. There. Good for her. But now she had blue tarp in one hand and was holding onto the cap of the roof with the other. How was she going to get to her hammer? With a whimper, she stretched out over the peak like a giant taco shell in the making, and then reached out a foot to hold down the tarp. Getting out her hammer had her breathing hard, but she managed. Now a nail. Oh, Lord, she was going to die. She kept herself spread eagle over the roof and managed to dig out a nail. Then scooted around so she could hammer while lying down, scraping her elbow in the process. Boy, was this fun. But with her first corner nailed down, she felt like she'd won gold in the Olympic Games. She could do this. Once she got busy rolling out and nailing down tarp, she was almost able to forget where she was, until it came time to go down the ladder for more. Her eye began to twitch. "Don't be such a sissy," she told herself. "You can do this. Just turn around, put your foot on the ladder." She reached out a foot. Into empty space. Eek! She pulled it back in, looked over the edge of the roof. It wasn't that long of a way down. Oh, yes, it was. She edged away from the ladder, digging her hands into the crumbly shingles. Helicopter rescue. That was what she needed. "Help!" she hollered, hoping Pete was somewhere around to hear. He wasn't. And while there were customers at the seafood shack across the parking lot, they were coming and going, talking and playing their car radios so loud no one would have heard her even if she'd had a bullhorn. The sun began to beat down on her, frying her shoulders. She wished she'd put a little bottle of water in one of her apron pockets. No, she wished she'd never gotten on this roof. Maybe someone would get the idea if she waved. She tried to stand to make the time-honored "Help me" wave of the stranded, had a panic attack and sat back down, heart thumping. Never mind. She didn't want help that badly. Her stomach began to rumble. It had to be getting close to lunchtime. That meant Aunt Edie would send Sabrina out with food. Then she could have her daughter call the fire department, and they'd bring out a ladder truck and rescue her. And she'd look like the idiot of Moonlight Harbor. Like she cared at this point. She just wanted off this roof. 1,000,000 years passed until finally Seth's truck came into sight. Help at last, and just in time. In addition to her whining stomach, Jenna's bladder was beginning to think fondly of a bathroom visit. He got out and came to stand at the base of the ladder.
"Checking out the view?" he called up.
"Something like that. Can you call the fire department?"
"Are you on fire?"
"I need someone to get me down."
"I think they only rescue cats."
"Ha ha," Jenna said sourly.
"You're afraid of heights, huh?"
She scowled at him. "Can you just call someone?"
"No, I'll get you down."
He started up the ladder, running up it with the agility of the fearless. Once at the top, he held out a hand.
"Come on, scoot down here where I can reach you."
"Oh," Jenna whimpered.
"You can do it. You got up there."
"Getting up and getting down are two different things," she informed him.
"Don't be a wuss," he said, his hand still out.
She sucked in a breath and scooted half an inch, the hot shingles burning her bottom as she went.
"You probably should let somebody else do this if you're afraid of heights," he said.
"Well, I didn't get any takers last night," she snapped.
"You didn't ask everyone. Come on, come down a little closer."
Another whimper, another 6 inches.
"You can do it," he said.
"Dear Lord, get me off this roof and I'll never be stupid again." Jenna scooted down some more until at last she was back at the ladder.
"Good," he said encouragingly. "Now stand up and turn around. I'll guide your foot."
"What if I fall?"
"I'll catch you."
"Yeah, but who'll catch you?"
"Come on, don't think like that. Get up."
Jenna managed to get almost up and turned around. Blink, blink. She commanded her eyes to stop twitching. She needed to watch what she was doing. But she didn't want to see where she was falling. Maybe she should shut them.
"Okay now, grab the ends of the ladder."
"And fall." Jenna was practically hyperventilating now.
"You can do it. Come on."
She swallowed hard, opened one eye, and grabbed the ladder. Then she swung out a foot. Immediately, his hand clamped over her ankle, guiding her foot to the first rung.
"Okay. First rung's the hardest. After this, it will be a piece of cake. Let's get your other foot on the ladder."
She had to stick out another foot. Blink, blink. Blink, 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 blink.
"Give me your damn foot," Seth growled.
His impatience galvanized her, and she stuck out her foot. With a whimper. That also was guided to the ladder, which she was now gripping with all her sweaty might.
"The hard part's over," he assured her, his tone softening. "Come on, next rung."
Several eye twitches and another whimper, and she managed another rung, and then another. Step by step, he walked her down until she was finally on solid ground. She was a sweaty mess, and her heart was pounding as if she'd run a marathon. She let out her breath. "Thanks."
"You're welcome. How long have you been up there, anyway?"
"Forever." And even though she'd put on makeup that morning, her lipstick had long worn off, and she was grimy, slimy, and sweaty. Someday this man would see her at her best. Maybe. Not that it mattered, since she was done with men.
"You'd better let me finish for you," he said.
She nodded, fine with her. "Thanks. I need to go..."
Well, she needed to go. "Wait a minute."
He ran to his truck, pulled a slab of wood from the front seat, and returned with it.
"Here's your sign."
He'd painted her company name on it, and on the side had managed to carve in a hand holding a seashell. He'd screwed two hooks on the top so she could hang it up.
"I can put in a post so you've got some place to hang it," he offered.
"Thanks. It's perfect. How did you do the hands?"
"I've got a Dremel. No big deal."
It was to her. Give me the bill for your materials, and I'll reimburse you.
It wasn't that much.
But it was yet another thing she'd asked him to do. Was she asking this guy to do too much? In light of the poor excuse for a room she was giving him, absolutely. I think I'm getting the better end of our bargain. He shrugged.
I like to keep busy, and I like being outside. Not enough business yet, so I don't mind having things to do around here.
He nodded in the direction of the roof.
I'll put up the rest of your tarp.
Thanks, she said. Then, I think I'll get inside. I need water.
Better put something on your face, he advised. Looks like you got a burn going.
There was an understatement, she thought once she looked in the bathroom mirror. She looked like Lobster Girl. Note to self, don't work on a roof in a sleeveless top. Correction, don't work on a roof at all. Can we fly my kite now? Sabrina asked, once Jenna had finished smearing every inch of available skin with aloe vera cream. Just what she wanted, more sun. Can we do that tomorrow? Sabrina frowned. I guess. She wrinkled her nose. You do look kind of sunburned. I am kind of sunburned. How about we play some cards with Aunt Edie instead? Okay, Sabrina said in resigned tones. First, let's make a run to the store for some root beer. We can make floats. That met with her daughter's approval, and they made their way to the grocery store. What did you do all day while I was up on the roof? Jenna asked. Nothing, Sabrina said with a pout. Nothing at all? You just sat like a rock all day? I did some sketching, and I wrote in my journal. She didn't volunteer what she wrote, and Jenna didn't ask. She didn't think she wanted to know. And I took some pictures. Ah, something positive to focus on. Did you get some good ones we can hang in the rooms? I guess, Sabrina said, refusing to reward her mom with any kind of positive attitude. Great. You'll have to show them to me when we get back. Sabrina just gave her another shrug, her reward for being a neglectful mom. Beachside Grocery was busy when they walked in, with both locals and tourists in town for the weekend, all picking up supplies. They snagged the last gallon of vanilla ice cream and a bottle of root beer and made their way to one of the lines of people waiting for access to a checker. In the process, they ran into Brody. He was looking handsome and polished as usual, wearing a blue shirt that matched those baby blue eyes.
Well, hey there, he greeted Jenna. Hi there, kiddo, he added, smiling at Sabrina.
She frowned and muttered a hello. Brody was impervious to teen girl disapproval.
Stocking up on food for the chick gathering tonight? He asked Jenna.
No, getting ready to play some cards, and we need sustenance.
Poker,
he teased as their goodies rode up the belt, and the checker began ringing up the purchase. I'm not a gambler, Jenna informed him, except she was taking the biggest gamble of her life with the Driftwood Inn. We're playing hands and buns.
Hands and buns, he repeated as if she'd said something naughty.
It's a card game. Sabrina grabbed the bag. Mom, our ice cream's melting. Oh, Jenna pulled out a bill, paid up, and got change.
Have fun, Brody said. See you tomorrow.
You're going out with him? Sabrina demanded as they crossed the parking lot. Just having dinner. Jeez, Mom, he's such a yuck. He called me kiddo. He was only being friendly. I'm not a kiddo, Sabrina said, her voice charged with umbrage. Anyway, you and Daddy are barely divorced. And Daddy's already with someone else, Jenna reminded her, which made Sabrina scowl. Jenna sighed inwardly. Wrong thing to say, as if her daughter wanted reminding that her father was moving on and leaving them in the dust. And now Jenna was shaking things up just when Sabrina craved security. She put an arm around her daughter. I'm not getting involved with anyone. Not him, please, Sabrina added in disgust. Anyway, I bet Daddy's not going to stay with Aurora forever. He'll start missing us and come back. And fish would walk. But what if he did come to his senses and ask her to take him back? Would she? Never. He'd hurt her too badly. Sabrina was quiet on the ride home, but once they started playing hands and buns, she reanimated and even crowed when she won, and Jenna felt less like a neglectful mother. How did other single moms manage that delicate balancing act between work and family without falling into guilt? She asked her mother that when she called her after dinner to report on her big roof adventure. "You remind yourself that you're doing what you have to do," Mel said. "It's that simple and that difficult." "Sometimes I feel like such a failure," Jenna confessed. "It wasn't you who failed. Don't take on the burden of your husband's bad behavior." But maybe he wouldn't have behaved badly if Jenna had admitted defeat, acknowledged that they were two mismatched people pulling in different directions instead of together, and set them both free. Too late to relive that part of her life. All she had was the present. But she wasn't sure she was managing that so well. She heaved a sigh. "I know I'm not spending enough time with Sabrina, and she hasn't made any friends here." "Things will sort themselves out, and you two will be fine," Mel said. "I hope so. I don't want to ruin her life." Aunt Edie's offer had looked like such a godsend at first, but now that Jenna was up to her eyeballs in the mess of trying to revive the motel, it felt more like some sick cosmic joke. "You're not. A little adversity is good for all of us." "That which doesn't kill me makes me stronger," Jenna said with a frown. "Something like that. It seems like most of us build up fortitude only by wading through rough waters." "I don't mind wading. I just don't want to drown." Mel chuckled. "You won't. Trust me on that." And after what her mom had gone through, she should know. They said their goodbyes, and Jenna went to help her aunt get ready for her Friday night gathering of friends. The fare was simple. Shrimp dip and crackers, a cheese ball that looked radioactive, and cubed watermelon. "The girls always bring wine," Aunt Edie said as they pulled out wine glasses. Aunt Edie had a variety, everything from polka dots to turquoise swirls, even one with a face complete with false eyelashes and earrings in the glass ears. "I collect them," she said. There was an idea to hang on to for Christmas. "Who all is coming tonight?" Jenna asked, bringing herself back into the present. "Let's see. Nora Singleton, for one. You've met Nora. She's a doll, and she and Bill have been so supportive ever since I lost Ralph. And, of course, my old friend Patricia Whiteside. Sometimes I wish I'd thought big like Patricia and made this place larger." Then they'd have an even bigger headache trying to remodel. "It's perfect the way it is," Jenna assured her, and Aunt Edie gave her a grateful smile. "Who else?" "Let's see. Tyrella, who you've met. We've done business for years. Cindy Redman. She's just as sweet as the candy she sells. Then there's Courtney Moore, who works at Beach Babes. Nora invited her to join us. That girl has a flair for designing clothes. If Susan Frank would give her a chance, she could bring in some wonderful distinctive pieces to Beach Babes." Jenna remembered Susan from the Chamber of Commerce meeting, she of the frown and the grumpy comments. "But you can't tell Susan anything," Aunt Edie continued. "Then there's Courtney's friend, Annie Albright." Aunt Edie shook her head. "There's a gal who needs to hit restart. Her husband is a drunken lout, works on and off as a handyman, drinks away most of his paycheck. Verbally abusive." "Why doesn't she leave him?" Jenna asked. "She keeps hoping he'll change. They've got a little girl. I think she's 8. "Does Annie work?" "She's a waitress at Sandy's, works the morning shift. She's quite the cook, and she'd love to have a little food truck someday. I don't know if she'll ever be able to make that happen. Not with the man she's tied to."
"This almost sounds like a support group," Jenna joked.
"In a way it is. They're all lovely women. I know you're going to enjoy them."
The women started arriving at a little before 7. Nora and Tyrella were the first and came bearing wine. They were followed by Cindy Redman. You can't have a Friday night without chocolate, she said, laying down a plate of chocolate truffles.
It pays to know people, Tyrella said, plucking one from the plate. Lord love you, Cindy. What would we do without you?
We'd be a lot skinnier, said Nora.
You're one to talk, ice cream queen, Cindy shot back good-naturedly.
Sabrina stuck around long enough to be fussed over and snag a chocolate treat, then disappeared into her room to text with Marigold, and Jenna vowed to invite the BFF down to visit as soon as they got things more squared away.
She's adorable, said Tyrella, who was already digging into the toxic cheese ball.
She can be, Jenna said.
Girls, Cindy said, shaking her head. They're enough to drive you to sugar. I have two, twins. They're off to college in the fall, thank God.
Remind me again, how old is your daughter? Nora asked Jenna.
14.
Nora gave a knowing nod. The right age to start driving you nuts. That's when my daughter became a handful, and the boys. She rolled her eyes. Once the testosterone kicked in, they were always at each other's throats. They're the best of friends now, though, and I don't know what I'd do without them to run the go-karts and arcade and golf.
What is it about teenagers, anyway? Put in Cindy.
Aliens, Nora said. When they hit adolescence, aliens come and take over their bodies. Once they hit their 20s, the aliens return to the mothership and your kid becomes human again.
There were smiles, nods, and chuckles to confirm the truth of Nora's statement.
I think my little alien would be happier here if she had a friend, Jenna said. She's lonely, and I'm not spending as much time with her as I'd like.
Kids need to have friends to hang out with, Nora acknowledged. My granddaughter Caroline is the same age, and she's coming for a visit later this month. Maybe they can hang out together.
That would be great, Jenna said. Any granddaughter of Nora's had to be a good kid.
I wish my daughter was old enough to keep her company, said Annie, who had arrived with some chips and dip. But she's still playing with dolls.
Encourage her to enjoy that as long as possible, Nora told her. Kids these days grow up way too fast.
Annie nodded, and her smile looked sad. How fast was her little girl growing up in a home with an alcoholic dad?
Of course, everyone wanted to hear all about Jenna, and the room was full of praise for her boldness in leaving her husband, as if she'd had a choice, and her kindness for coming to help their pal, Edie. Hardly surprising, in light of the fact that Edie made her sound like a cross between Mother Teresa and Joan of Arc. She was impressed with them, too. Courtney was striking, tall and willowy with dark hair, strong features, and a flair for dress that declared her an artist. She had a fancy mani and pedi, with both her fingernails and toenails dotted with tiny seashells, and wore a necklace of silver mermaids and sand dollars. She was a gum chewer, taking her gum out to enjoy treats and perching it on the edge of her wine glass.
Tacky, I know, she said to Jenna, but it's either this or smoking.
Jenna couldn't help admiring her cold shoulder top with the lace-trimmed bottom that she wore over her tight jeans, which were decorated with lace seashells. She smiled down at it.
It's one of my designs.
It's gorgeous.
It would look great on you, Courtney said. One of these days I'm going to have my own clothing line and put on a fashion show at the porthole. Maybe you and your daughter will be models for me in exchange for getting to keep the clothes?
No maybe about it, Jenna said. That would be a for sure.
Courtney's friend Annie was as shy and quiet as Courtney was outgoing. She was a pretty brunette, clad simply in white jeggings and a faded t-shirt printed with a picture of a smiling quarter moon. No fancy manicure for her. As the evening wore on, Jenna noticed her rubbing her right shoulder a lot. She moved over to sit next to Annie on the couch.
Is your shoulder bothering you?
Annie blushed and waved away Jenna's concern.
It's nothing.
I'm a massage therapist. Let me see if I can work out some of the kinks.
Annie's protests were weak enough to convince Jenna the woman was only being polite, so she moved behind her and went to work.
Oh my gosh, that hurts so good, Annie said with a groan.
Whoa, what's this? Demanded Courtney.
Oh, I forgot to tell you all. Jenna's a massage therapist, said Aunt Edie. She's going to set up business right here at the house.
I'll be your first customer, Tyrella said.
Then I'll be your second, said Cindy.
Jenna smiled. Good. She could use all the business she could get. Your traps are a little tight, she told Annie. Are you under any stress? She had to be with the man she was married to.
No more than anyone else, I guess, Annie replied.
Courtney gave a snort.
Yeah, right. She may as well know right off what the rest of us know. Your husband's a shit.
Annie's muscles bunched under Jenna's fingers. I get it, Jenna assured her. She found a rhomboid and worked it.
Oh my, Annie yelped. That goes all the way up my neck.
You get trigger points where the neck is knotted, Jenna explained. It refers pain to other parts of the body. This one in your shoulder is referring right up your neck.
In other words, her husband is a pain in the neck, Courtney said.
Maybe, Jenna said. Courtney was trying to drive home a point, but in light of what Jenna had gone through and what Annie was going through, it wasn't funny, and nobody laughed.
I guess that was tacky, huh?
Courtney muttered.
Just a little, Cindy said. Greg's not going to change, she told Annie. You should kick him out.
Annie sighed.
I can't afford to. Anyway, he's fine when he's not drinking.
Courtney gave a disapproving frown.
And when is that?
He started AA. Things are going to improve.
He's started AA before, Courtney reminded her.
I'm trying to keep us a family for Emma's sake.
Yeah, but what kind of example are you setting for Emma?
Courtney argued, making Annie tense up all over again. Jenna suspected these two had had this conversation before. She didn't blame Courtney for wanting to help her friend, but what to do with a problem husband was a very personal decision. Was Courtney married? Did she understand the whole family dynamic dilemma thing?
I know, I don't have a kid, Courtney said as if reading Jenna's mind. But I had a loser husband, and I don't regret cutting him out of my life.
It's different when you have a child, Annie said softly.
Jenna sighed. Yes, it was.
Well, we'll just keep praying for him, Tyrella said firmly. Pray that demon alcohol right out of him.
I say we beat it out of him, Courtney muttered.
I say we change the subject, Nora said. And after that, the evening's conversation turned to lighter subjects. What new books the women were reading, whether or not the latest movie showing at Seaside Cinema was worth seeing, who was dieting, who had given up.
At one point, there was a discussion about the upcoming festival and the hope that it would bring in some new visitors.
And some return visitors, Cindy said.
I'm sure it will, Nora told her. I hear we're supposed to have a hot summer, which will be good for tourism.
I hope so. We need to bring in more business than we did last summer if we're going to make it through the winter, Cindy confessed.
Her words sent a cold shiver down Jenna's spine. She wasn't sure they were going to make much money at the inn before winter. She hoped between her massage business and Aunt Edie's social security they could hang on until the next summer.
Okay, ladies, let's make sure we all buy a ton of chocolate, Nora said, and the others smiled and nodded. It'll be tough to force myself to eat more chocolate, but I'll try, Courtney joked. Don't worry, we'll get you through winter, Tyrella promised, demonstrating the commitment the people of the little beachside community had for each other.
It's got to be hard to keep going when the bulk of your business is seasonal, Jenna said, hoping someone would contradict her.
It is, Nora admitted, but we're all here because we love Moonlight Harbor.
Life's good at the beach, Courtney said, as long as you can pay the bills.
We just need to keep working on ways to bring people into town, Nora said. We're not that far from Seattle, and Olympia is only an hour away.
Our mayor keeps talking about making things happen, Tyrella said, but so far, we're not seeing much.
We do have those wayfinders now, Nora said.
Tyrella made a face.
Street signs shaped like giant shells. That will bring the tourists.
Change takes time, Nora reminded her.
Anyway, it's a beginning. Obviously, she was a fan of the mayor.
Time. How much time did Jenna have?
The evening ended around 10 with hugs for all, and Jenna went up to her bedroom feeling like she'd put down some good roots in the sandy soil of Moonlight Harbor. Now, if they could just find a friend for Sabrina, life at the beach would be really good. She checked in on her daughter, who was still texting away, and ordered a switch to a book so she could settle down for sleep. It wasn't too hard to persuade Sabrina to do that, as she loved to read and was caught up in a dystopian tale of a mutant teen girl with superpowers. Jenna wished she had superpowers. If she did, she could find a way to use them to make a huge pile of money for the motel. Except superheroes never used their powers for ignoble and boring things like money. She flopped on her bed and began texting her sister about her adventures.
"I'm so jealous," Celeste texted. "You get to live down at the beach."
"You did look at the pictures I sent, right?"
"That can all be fixed," Celeste texted back breezily. "It's all cosmetic."
"Cosmetics for hotels don't come cheap. I need a new roof. No money."
"We'll think of something."
Maybe Celeste would. Her sister was the creative one. When they were kids, she could craft circles around Jenna and specialized in turning clamshells and beach pebbles into charming characters, complete with eyelashes and beach hats. When she wasn't doing that, she was often curled up in a corner with a notepad, scribbling stories. She had enough imagination for 10 people. After hearing about the mysterious Seth Waters, she'd decided he was either a burned-out Navy SEAL or one of America's most wanted criminals come to the beach to hide out. Maybe he was. Of course, he could also be the type of man who didn't like to talk about himself. Who knew? Jenna wished she did. There was something fascinating about the man that pulled her like the moon pulled the tide. Or maybe she was just sex-starved, because Brody managed a pretty good pull, too. What was the deal with Seth?
"So, anything happening with Seth-alicious?"
Her sister was a mind reader. "Not interested." She'd been fascinated by Damien, too, and look where that had gotten her.
"You can't give up on love."
Oh, yes, she could.
"I want to come down and meet everyone," texted Celeste. "Hook me up with Seth if you don't want him. He sounds like a hunk."
"What about the new Mr. Wonderful?"
"Hee-hee, yeah, him. He's great. So sexy. And fun."
"And responsible? You did say he has a job, right?"
"Of course he has a job. He's a cop. It doesn't get any better than that."
"Has he used his handcuffs on you yet?"
"What do you think?"
A noise downstairs caught Jenna's attention. Aunt Edie had gone to bed. Sabrina was reading about the end of the world.
"You there?" prompted Celeste.
"Yeah, thought I heard something."
"What?"
"Nothing, just my imagination."
But there went her imagination again.
It sounded like someone was in the kitchen. There it goes again.
And there went her heart rate, picking up. "Call 911.
"It's probably the wind."
But the wind didn't open cupboard doors. Now Jenna's right eye was twitching. She'd locked both the front and back doors. Who would break into Aunt Edie's house? It didn't exactly look like Millionaire Acres.
"I'd better go see who's down there.
Or maybe I'd better hide under the bed." Jenna told herself to stop being such a baby. She had to be imagining things. Oh boy, there went her imagination again.
"Call the cops!"
"I'll be back," Jenna texted, then slipped off the bed and tiptoed to her bedroom door. She opened it a crack and listened. Was someone moving around down there? What did she have for a weapon? She remembered the pepper spray she'd always carried in her purse when she'd gone for walks after work, in case of rape or mad dog attack. Good thing she never cleaned her purse. She fished out the can and tiptoed back to the door. She'd never used the stuff, wasn't even sure it worked, but it was better than nothing. Unless the intruder had a gun. She swallowed and tiptoed across the landing, heart thumping, eye twitching. Maybe she should call the cops. Blink, blink, blink.
Thump, thump, thump.
She started down the stairs. Just like the idiots in movies who went into the dark basement all by themselves and then got their throats slit. That was her, idiot girl.
There was someone in the house. The kitchen light was on. What kind of dumb crook turned on the light?
I've got a gun, Jenna yelled, and I've called the police.
What?
Replied the burglar. The kitchen door opened and Jenna grabbed her pepper spray and aimed, and got a nice dose in the face.
Chapter 10. To do. Paint rooms. Fly kite with Sabrina. Get eye drops.
Pain, horror, misery. With a screech, she bolted into the kitchen, knocking over the burglar and ricocheting off the table, groping for the sink. Her face was on fire. Her eyeballs were going to melt.
What the hell are you doing? Demanded the burglar from behind her.
Pete? What was Pete doing in the kitchen this time of night?
You could have broken my hip.
Never mind your hip. My eyes! Jenna cried, fumbling for the faucet. Pete turned it on and shoved her head underneath the water.
Of all the dumb things to do.
First, he'd scared the snot out of her. Now he was practically drowning her. She shoved his hand away and positioned her eyes under the cool water.
Misery. Torture. You shouldn't have that stuff if you don't know how to use it, he scolded.
I never had to use it, and I was scared. What are you doing in here, anyway? He shoved something into her field of vision. Through the curtain of water, it looked like a jar of mayonnaise.
I was making a sandwich.
At 11 at night?
I got hungry, so sue me.
How did you even get in?
I have a key.
Were her eyes ever going to stop burning? She rubbed them and whimpered.
Water alone isn't gonna do it, Pete said. Hold out your hand.
Jenna held out her hand and he squirted dish soap into it.
You gotta wash out the oils.
Jenna soaped up her eyes and let out a screech.
Keep washing, he instructed.
How do you know this anyway? He was probably simply trying to torture her, the old goat.
I demonstrated in the 60s.
Never mind his political beliefs. What were you doing with the key to the house?
Your aunt gave me one, he replied, sounding offended. In case she fell or something.
Or in case you get the munchies in the middle of the night. Talk about taking advantage.
I earn my keep, he muttered.
Yes, she'd seen how he'd earned his keep before she arrived. She held out her hand again. You don't need a key anymore. I'm here.
You don't own this place yet.
Pete, give me the key. You're not going to be coming in at all hours, scaring the tar out of us. It was hard to look authoritative when you had your head stuck under a faucet. He stood there for a moment, then finally slapped the key in her hand.
I'm gonna talk to your aunt, he threatened.
So am I, she shot back. From outside, a siren sounded.
Did you call the cops?
He demanded. No.
Well, they're here,
he snapped, and to prove it, there was a banging on the front door. Give me a towel, Jenna demanded.
Get one yourself,
he said, leaving Jenna to fumble for a kitchen towel and stomping off toward the back door. He opened it to find a police officer standing there. The officer was short and husky with a receding hairline and a bulbous nose, and he looked about as intimidating as a mushroom.
Put your hands on your head and step back, he said.
Rule follower that she was, Jenna obeyed immediately.
Not you, miss, said the cop. I can tell you're not a perp.
I'm not a perp, Pete growled as he put up his hands. I live here.
The banging on the front door continued, and the officer lifted his shoulder and spoke to it. I'll go let your partner in, Jenna said, and hurried it down the hall, wiping at her stinging eyes as she went. The officer at the front door was much better looking than his partner, probably 30-something, with sandy-colored hair and hazel eyes. He wasn't much taller than his partner, but he sure filled out his uniform well. He took in Jenna's pink Old Navy camisole and her sleep shorts and blushed.
Are you all right, ma'am?
he asked as she let him in.
Yes, I'm fine. I didn't call the police.
The officer nodded.
I know. Your sister did. She said she was on the phone with you when you had an intruder.
My intruder turned out to be our handyman, Jenna said, leading him down the hall. I'm so sorry we bothered you.
No bother. That's what we're here for.
He had a nice, rumbly voice. She hadn't seen a ring on his finger. For such a small, sleepy town, there sure seemed to be plenty of single men around.
Will you tell him I'm not a burglar? Pete demanded when she returned to the kitchen with her police escort.
He was still standing in the middle of the room with his hands up and looking none too happy about it.
He's not, Jenna said as she wiped her poor, watering eyes.
This is our handyman. I didn't know he had a key to the house. The short officer looked him up and down.
Where did you get the key, sir?
Edie gave it to me, Pete snarled.
The officer frowned and nodded. I'm sorry we bothered you, Jenna added. This was all a big misunderstanding. I was on the phone with my sister and made the mistake of telling her I heard a noise.
It's better to be safe than sorry, said Officer Mushroom.
Says who? Pete demanded.
She walked the two officers to the door and thanked them for coming.
Are you sure you're all right?
Asked the tall one. She would be after she'd poured another 10 gallons of water over her face. She wiped at her eyes. I'm fine. I just accidentally sprayed myself with pepper spray.
Keep washing your eyes, advised Officer Mushroom.
She nodded and opened the door.
And call us anytime, he added as they walked out. We're not busy.
That was comforting. She didn't think she'd want to live in a community where the police were busy all the time. She waved goodbye to the officers, then went back to the kitchen to deal with Pete. She found him putting together a bologna sandwich. His cheeks turned russet under her disgusted gaze, but he braved it out, calmly returning the mayo and bologna to the fridge. Then he picked up his sandwich and started for the door.
I could have had a heart attack, you know.
They should be so lucky.
Well, you didn't. You'll live to mooch off my aunt another day, she retorted.
You should talk,
he shot back and left, slamming the door behind him.
Hey, I'm family, she called after him. What's your excuse?
No response. Bon appetit, she muttered, and stuck her head under the faucet again. The next morning, she had a little talk with Aunt Edie before Sabrina came down and before Pete the Mooch showed up and explained what had happened.
Oh, my, I didn't hear a thing, Aunt Edie said. I took out my hearing aids and was dead to the world.
If he had been a burglar, you could have been dead, period, Jenna scolded. Aunt Edie waved that concern away.
Nonsense. Pete wouldn't hurt a fly.
That's not the point, said Jenna. We can't be giving out house keys right and left. And why does Pete need a key?
In case of emergency, Aunt Edie said.
Was that his suggestion? Jenna probed.
Her aunt got suddenly very busy making coffee.
So it was.
I was in perfect agreement. We've become good friends, and we've been helping each other.
It appeared the one getting most of the help had been Pete. If there was one thing Jenna was becoming an expert on, it was men who were users.
And it made sense for him to have a key. I was here alone.
Guilt popped up and bit Jenna in the behind. I know, she said, and moved to put an arm around her aunt. But I'm here now, so he doesn't need a key anymore. Besides, he takes advantage of you. Do you know that I caught him making himself a sandwich? He already eats 3 meals a day thanks to your generosity and does practically nothing to earn them. Plus, he's got a room he's not paying rent for.
With no furniture in it, Aunt Edie pointed out.
Beggars can't be choosers.
Besides, I walked by the other day when his room door was open and saw he's put an army cot in there. So he's fine. And really, considering how little he does around here, he should be grateful he even gets a bare room. The subject of their conversation walked into the kitchen at that moment. Of course, Aunt Edie had already unlocked the back door for him. He scowled at Jenna.
Did she tell you she called the cops on me last night? He said to Aunt Edie.
Call the cops, suggested Jolly Roger, who was stationed at his kitchen perch.
I thought you were a burglar, Jenna said, and her eyes were still smarting from the experience.
A burglar who turns on the light? Pete scoffed.
How do I know what burglars do? Anyway, it was Celeste who called the cops. Aunt Edie's brows shot up. Your sister?
I was texting her and told her I heard a noise. She panicked. And she hadn't been the only one. Thank God Sabrina, who would sleep through an earthquake, had missed the whole thing. She'd have been terrified.
I almost got arrested, Pete continued, looking accusingly at Jenna.
Well, I got pepper spray in my eyes, so let's call it even.
She took my key, Pete tattled.
Jenna spoke before her aunt could cave and insist on giving back the key, along with free access to the fridge. She knows. We've talked about this. It's just not good to have keys out there all over the place.
Pete's eyebrows dipped.
I'm not all over the place, and I've been here with your aunt, watching over her, and...
I know, and I do appreciate that, Jenna added, trying for some level of diplomacy. But really, Pete, it's best that only the family have keys. Anyway, the door's unlocked all day long. It's only locked after we turn in for the night. Surely there's no reason you need to be in here in the middle of the night, right? I mean, what reason could you possibly have?
Other than to gobble up more food you didn't pay for.
He frowned and grunted, but dropped the subject when Aunt Edie said, Poached eggs for breakfast.
That sounds good, he said,
and plunked himself down at the table as if he belonged there. Maybe after all this time he did, but not in the middle of the night.
Now, what's on the agenda for today? Aunt Edie asked,
obviously determined to steer them away from any further conversation about the night before. We need to start painting the rooms, Jenna said, and Pete scowled.
Well, I think I'll make some beach sandies, said Aunt Edie. Your favorite, she added, smiling at him.
Sure, reward his bad behavior.
Honestly, it was a good thing Aunt Edie never had kids. The promise of his favorite cookie coaxed a smile from Pete, and by the time they were done eating, he was almost in a cheerful mood. Until Jenna stood and said, We'd better get to work. Come on, Pete. If Sabrina wants, she can help you make cookies, Jenna said to Aunt Edie. Tell her if she comes help paint, we'll fly her kite this afternoon. It would mean an afternoon of work lost, but mother-daughter bonding time gained. It was a good trade-off. No, better than good. Sabrina did show up to help and worked hard, and Jenna was happy to reward her. They hit the beach after lunch. They had just assembled her kite when Seth Waters came walking up the beach. He was barefoot in jeans and a gray t-shirt, and he looked like a cover model on his way to a shoot.
Great. Now you're going to stand around and talk, Sabrina grumbled.
Be nice, Jenna said, and waved at him.
Your aunt said you were out here. I just came to check and see if you wanted some help painting.
Actually, we've quit for the day. We're taking the afternoon off to play. Aren't we, Sabrina? Sabrina nodded.
Can we start?
Sure, Jenna said, and handed over the kite. Sabrina took it and began to run down the beach. She failed to catch the breeze, and the kite trailed after her half-heartedly.
First time? Seth asked.
Yes, I guess I should have given her a little more instruction. It's been too many years since I've done this. Sabrina came back.
This kite is lame.
Here.
Seth took the kite from her hands.
You hold the string.
Sabrina's brows knit.
He's walking off with my kite.
He's going to help you launch it, Jenna told her.
Okay, I'm gonna let go, he called. Tighten your string a little when I do.
He let go and the wind caught the kite, taking it into the air. The octopus on it began to dip and bow with the currents, the kite tail dancing. Sabrina concentrated on keeping the string tight, her top teeth clamped on her mouth.
All right, you've got liftoff, Jenna said to her. Now what do I do?
You could unspool the string and let it go higher. Keep your back to the wind.
Sabrina smiled.
It's so pretty.
So was her daughter. With the wind blowing her hair, her eyes shining with the joy of a new experience, Jenna pulled her phone from her pocket and snapped a picture.
Seth was back with them now.
Here, let me get one of both of you.
Sabrina was busy concentrating on keeping her kite in the air, so Jenna stepped next to her and smiled.
Nice, he said and handed the phone back.
She checked out the picture. Yes, it was nice. They both looked relaxed and happy. Caption this, a good day at the beach. Who knew you were an expert at kite flying? Jenna said to him as Sabrina worked on becoming one with the wind and the octopus.
I used to like to fly kites as a kid.
He watched Sabrina and smiled.
Being out here brings back good memories.
Something in his voice made her wonder if he'd racked up some not-so-good memories since then, but she refrained from asking him. He wouldn't appreciate it.
If you don't need me, I think I'll go work on drumming up some business, he said.
She kind of hated to see him go, but the man did have a life. Maybe you could help me Monday afternoon. A few hours painting together would be the perfect opportunity to get to know her new handyman better. Okay, to be nosy.
Sure, he said. See you around.
She watched him walk away. The man had a beautiful butt. So, maybe she liked to see him go after all. Kite flying followed by a cookie break left her daughter in a happy mood, which put Jenna in a good mood as well. Sabrina's mood wasn't quite so happy when Jenna started getting ready to go out with Brody. I don't see why you have to go out, she muttered. You don't spend any time with me.
Oh, boy. Guilt trip time.
Oh, my gosh. Was that your clone I was out with this afternoon? Jenna asked in mock horror. Funny, Mom, Sabrina said sourly. You're going out to have fun and leaving me here. To have pot pie and play Monopoly with Aunt Edie. I don't need a babysitter, said Princess Thundercloud. No, you don't, but she needs company. She's been lonely down here. Maybe you haven't noticed how much she's enjoying having you helping her in the kitchen. Yeah, Sabrina said with a half shrug. And she's looking forward to you spending some time with her tonight. Sabrina pursed her lips. I guess I could do that. Jenna rewarded her with a smile and a kiss. Good. What are we going to do tomorrow? She asked when Jenna went back to putting on her mascara. Church, for starters. Yuck. Sabrina said, falling against the door jamb. Those kids are mean.
They can't all be mean.
Well, maybe they could. We'll do something fun after church. I think Tyrell is going to have us over for dinner. She doesn't have any kids, Sabrina grumped. Yes, but Mrs. Singleton has a granddaughter your age, and she'll be down here soon. She's probably mean.
Ah, yes. The glass was half empty.
How's it going? Brody asked as he drove Jenna to Sandy's.
I'm loving it. My daughter, not so much.
Kids adapt, he said.
Do they? I wonder. It seemed like most of her life there had been a daddy-shaped hole in her heart no one could really fill. Although heaven knew the grandpas and Uncle Ralph had done a good job of taking up a lot of space. And what about Sabrina? What was going to fill that hole that Damien had left when he chucked them for the Disney princess with the big boobs?
They do, said Brody. My kids turned out fine. They come down here with all their friends, windsurf, tear around on mopeds, party, and eat me out of house and home. Hit me up for money.
And then leave again. Don't you miss them when they're gone?
Are you nuts? My place is a madhouse when they're here. Love it when they come. Love it when they go. He smiled at Jenna. Don't worry. Your girl's going to be fine.
She hoped so. They pulled up in front of the restaurant.
Come on. Let's go in and wash away your worries with some wine. You need to try their coconut shrimp. It's the best.
By the time she'd sipped some wine and eaten some coconut shrimp and let Brody regale her with tales of life at the beach, she was feeling much better.
Of course, he concluded after his last story. No one ever let poor Bruce live down the fact that he'd spend all that money on clam guns and shovels and the bucket and collecting net, and then forgot to get boots. We nicknamed him Mudman.
Jenna giggled and had some more wine. It was her second glass, and she was definitely getting giggly.
Was it her imagination, or did she have trouble holding her liquor? After wine, coconut shrimp, followed by prime rib and baked potatoes the size